JR of the JR Sport Brief Show on CBS Sports Radio. I'm also the host of the new podcast, Agents of Inclusion. We talk to a different Special Olympics athlete every week to learn how sports can bring us together.
We're bringing both the disability and non-disability community to one community. All one people, one family.
Took me a little while, but I decided to claim autism as my superpower. When you hear the word autism, don't let that hinder you from doing whatever it is that you want to do.
That's what Special Olympics tells you. You get involved in sport, but then you take it from the playing field out into real life.
Family means to me community, acceptance, love, embracing a person just as they are. That's what Special Olympics did for me.
It's all about family. Subscribe to Agents of Inclusion on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Tuesday to you. Yes, it's me. I didn't get fired. I didn't get sick. I didn't have an accident. No, I just took a longer vacation than what I normally do, and it was weird. I will be honest with you. It was weird to be gone for a week and a half. It was weird to get off the air on Friday morning, April 7th, and not return to the air until Monday night, April 17th. That was a long time. I don't remember the last time I didn't do a radio show for 10 days. Whew! Now, I will be honest, the first week, didn't miss it. Had family weekend over Easter, celebrating my birthday with my nieces, their birthdays. Awesome to have the family in town. Starting my class at Syracuse University. So this past week, and actually last night, I've had my first two classes as an adjunct professor. That's why I'm here on the campus of Syracuse University. Full circle moment for me because I did shows as a student here. I was an intern for the commercial radio station, but I also worked for the student station on campus. I did my first play-by-play of college basketball here at Syracuse, but it's been 20 plus years. And now here I am hosting a radio show from a building where I took classes. What? Now, it's not the same rooms. These are all different. One of the reasons why Syracuse is the best broadcast school in the country is because of their world-class facilities. And so I asked the facilities director, can I bring my equipment and set up in one of your soundproof rooms? He gave me my pick, gave me a choice. So I'm in a control room, actually one that they use to teach producing and directing. So it's a little bit like it's a skills lab, but it's a little bit like a control room that you would see behind the scenes at a TV station or a TV network. And so I'm here, incredible quality. It's awesome to be hosting a show from a place that meant so much to me and really a springboard in getting my career started. So that's why I'm here, but it's been a whirlwind. By Sunday night, now the reason I did not get back and host the show on Sunday night is because I knew that traveling, so I did a red eye home from Arizona. I did not sleep on Saturday night into Sunday. I wasn't going to get a lot of time to catch up. I had to unpack. I had to repack. I hadn't seen my pets, blah, 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 blah. I thought it would be too much to host the show Sunday night, drive to Syracuse, teach my class, and then host the show Monday. But it was a long time. And by Sunday afternoon, as I'm watching basketball and I'm starting to catch up, I was getting the itch, to be sure. I missed it. I missed this. I missed Jay. I missed you. I want to say that and be perfectly honest about it because it wasn't until the last 24 hours that I missed it. But that's the beauty. Like Matthew Stafford was just saying, rejuvenated, refreshed, re-energized. My passion has been rekindled. The time away does that. And so these next couple months, it's an all-out blitz. I've got no more time off until the third week in June. And we'll be doing a couple more shows from Syracuse, but I'm feeling refreshed and recharged and ready to go. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. I promise, before the show is done, a couple of my favorite photos from the Grand Canyon. If you missed the story, just told it last hour, so go and grab the podcast. So many of you not only sent me kind words, but asked me about the experience. I'm still pretty overwhelmed. I'm still processing it. it was way better than I expected. And I have a pretty active imagination. But to be there to check that item off my bucket list in such an incredible way, gosh, I'm still thinking about it. And so I'm going to post photos throughout the week. I'm going to do a blog post. But for now, a couple photos at a time is the best I can do. So again, on Twitter or on Facebook, always happy to connect with you. It's After Hours on our YouTube channel as well. And then our podcast you can get every weekday morning in its entirety. If you went to bed, actually, you know what? I won't even say that. I don't know what time you went to bed. It doesn't matter. You may not know the news coming from the NFL, but here's how I found out. This is actually kind of funny. My students, they told me they need a break 90 minutes in. Fine. It's a 3 hour and 10 minute class-ish. They tried to trick me and say it was just 3 hours. So they told me they need a break at 90 minutes. So I give them a break. I go over to the computer where I've got my outline up, and I'm looking at my outline as I'm going through some of our topics last night. And I happened to open up one of the, I don't remember which website, CBSSports.com maybe, and I see the Jalen Hurts news. Jalen Hurts, the domino has dropped. So if you missed it, of course the NFL was going to have some big, humongous headline in this quieter period. Or, more to the point, as the NBA and the NHL are starting their postseasons, the NFL is jealous. And it's now. The time is now for voluntary OTAs and for Jalen Hurts to now ascend the list. He ascends the mountain and is the highest paid NFL player per season. $51 million. It's not quite a million more than Aaron Rodgers. It is $2 million more than Russell Wilson makes per season. I'm thinking right now, if I ask you to raise your hand and tell me which of those three quarterbacks that you would like for the here and now and the long term, well, Jalen Hurts. He's worth the money. He's worth the investment because he's so early in his career. No doubt, similar to the Kansas City Chiefs, and Patrick Mahomes, the Eagles in 5 years over the life of this contract may actually end up thinking Jalen Hurts is relatively cheap per season. Who knows how much higher these average annual salaries climb? But I suspect that Joe Burrow will be either at this Jalen Hurts mark or slightly above the Jalen Hurts mark. It really is just... it's about timing, right? Sometimes it's about preference. Jalen and Joe are two very different quarterbacks. Jalen has been to a Super Bowl now with his Eagles. Joe went to a Super Bowl with his Bengals. Again, they're different, but they do have commensurate experiences and commensurate paths to this point. It's very clear that each of these franchises is going all in on its quarterback, and each of these franchises is making a statement with some of the elements of this contract specifically, and I dare say Joe's will be the same. So Hurts' deal not only pays him $51 million per season, which is more than any other player, but quarterbacks are at the top of that list. I think it's notable that the entire contract, the extension, is for $255 million. That's more than Deshaun Watson. That's more than what we got from the Aaron Rodgers, right? So his was a three-year deal. The money, the bulk of the contract is more. And the fact that it's $179 million guaranteed, also an astronomical number. Now, is it Deshaun Watson? Is it Kyler Murray? No, it's third on the list in terms of most guaranteed money. But I'll ask you the same question. Raise your hand if you'd rather have Jalen Hurts than Deshaun Watson or Kyler Murray at this point. I sure would. So it's $255 million if he plays out the entire contract. Chances are he won't. They may renegotiate, do a different extension. How much things can change in 1 year, forget 3 years or 5 years. But he rewarded them for their faith in him as their quarterback when there were questions surrounding him, when there's always these ideas that, hey, the Eagles could do better. And Let me rephrase that. There were these ideas. There were. There aren't anymore. There were these ideas, these conversations, these debates, this chatter about whether or not the Eagles could do better than Jalen Hurts based on his first two seasons. But after they said publicly over and over and over again, Jalen is our quarterback, they didn't go out and find a different quarterback last offseason. They weren't looking to create a competition. They weren't looking to replace him. They weren't trying to upgrade. No, they said over and over again, Jalen Hurts is our quarterback. We have faith in Jalen. His numbers weren't terrible in 2021. Remember, the team made the playoffs. So it was Nick Sirianni's first year. The team made the playoffs. He started 15 games. He had 16 touchdowns versus 9 interceptions. He had a few rushing touchdowns in there as well. But you wouldn't say it was some superstar year. It wasn't an all-pro year. It wasn't a Pro Bowl year. His completion percentage was 61%, 3,100 yards, roughly. So not bad numbers, and they went to the playoffs. But despite the chatter, despite the whispers about whether or not the Eagles could do better, not only Howie Roseman, but Nick Sirianni said ad nauseum, Jalen's our quarterback. They put their faith in him, and he rewards them by having a career year, showing everyone that he's worthy of their faith. But I love that. I love the fact that they trusted him, they believed in him, and he paid them back for that in droves, right? 15 games this season. The Eagles go 14-1 in those games. He's second in the MVP race. He's second team All-Pro. He's a Pro Bowler. Most importantly, he plays the game of his life in the Super Bowl. Yeah, he did have a late turnover that was costly, but by far the best season of the three that he's had in the NFL. And so now it's reciprocated again, right? So it's kind of a cool back and forth between Jalen and the team. They have faith in him. He rewards that with a career year. He guides them to the Super Bowl. He has the game of his life in the Super Bowl with 374 total yards. They turn around and they give him this huge contract. I love it. It's a relationship that's carved over trust and faith. And it's a win-win for both parties. It's a win for Jalen. It's a win for the Eagles. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So yes, the numbers are eye-popping to be sure. But at 24 years old, already an MVP runner-up, his numbers took a huge jump last season. But most importantly, the Eagles did. Right? They win the best division in football, the NFC Beast. They have the top seed in the NFC. And this is with challenges from the Cowboys, from the Giants for a stretch. He shows growth. His completion percentage takes a big jump. His quarterback rating, his passer rating, and he becomes quicker at releasing the football, right? So he's becoming more experienced, more comfortable in the pocket. He can see what's happening. And what else did the Eagles do? They went out and they got him weapons. A.J. Brown being number one. He has 43 touchdowns last season, most ever in franchise history for a single year. It's all coming up. It's all coming up Eagles green. Oh, maybe green as in the color of money for Jalen Hurts, but also for the Eagles because they can see a future where this trend continues. They can see a future where they remain relevant and remain a Super Bowl contender, and that is obviously the point. If you win a Super Bowl, when you win a Super Bowl, when you get to a Super Bowl, the investment becomes utterly worth it. There is no question. Every team out there would pay their quarterback this kind of money if they believed or if they knew it would result in Super Bowl appearances and being a contender. The Eagles have seen it. They love what they have in Jalen Hurts, all of his philosophies and his life lessons that he shares with us at press conferences. He's a deep guy. He's a deep thinker. But he's also a great leader, and the guys around him really respond. So congratulations to him. Now what happens with Joe Burrow? That's interesting, right? It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So this is what I keep coming back to that kind of blows me away. And I'll look up the numbers here. I believe Patrick Mahomes has now dropped out of the top five for richest quarterback contracts. I'm going to Google it just so I know Josh Allen is out of the top five. And so it's kind of crazy. Now, Josh has not yet been to the Super Bowl with the Bills. He's an amazing quarterback and certainly, I believe, will win an MVP at some point in his career. I do believe that the Bills will make a Super Bowl. They've obviously had some opportunities. It's painful that they haven't been able to capitalize, but take nothing away from Josh. I mean, he's a phenomenal quarterback, right? So I know that he's out of the top five. The Patrick Mahomes contract may now be out of the top five here, so I'm going to look at it. Jalen Hurts is number one, and this goes by average annual value. Actually, I want total value, not average annual value. But if we're talking average annual value, both Pat and Josh are now outside of the top five. I keep thinking, at some point, Mahomes could, now he may not, but he could ask for a retooling of his contract, right? I'm using my air quotations here, please understand me, only making $45 million per year. Josh is $43 million per year. And then you've got Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott, and Daniel Jones at $40 million per year. Kind of interesting that three of the top 10 in average annual value are from the NFC East, capitalizing on a season in which they were the NFC Beast. So Jalen at $51 million, Pat's out of the top five at average annual value, $45 million. Couldn't he at some point ask for an extension, considering the Chiefs have two Super Bowls in his tenure, another Super Bowl appearance. So three Super Bowl appearances in 4 years, two rings. He's got two MVP awards and a Super Bowl MVP. No joke. If you are his representation, now I don't know. Patrick doesn't strike me as this type of a guy to go back and say, yo, these guys are making more than me now. It's a status symbol. It's validation. It's respect. He doesn't seem like that kind of a guy. I think he cares more about winning, and he cares about the teammates that he's got and keeping a group together that can be competitive. But I do wonder at some point if it's something that will be revisited, because he's no longer in the top five. His total contract was $450 million. Josh is $258 million. Now Jalen is three in terms of total package. Very often these quarterbacks, really any NFL player, doesn't play the entire contract. Teams want to retool, they want to restructure, or something happens, a player gets hurt, they end up getting cut, blah, blah, blah. The Russell Wilson situation, the Kyler Murray situation. It's hard to imagine those two guys will play out the length of their contracts, but we shall see. But Patrick Mahomes showing up at voluntary OTAs, I don't know where I got that from, OTAs, and talking about that Jalen Hurts deal, and I love that he's not jealous. Well, he might be, but he's not going to let you hear that he's jealous. Instead, he's happy for Jalen.
Congrats to him. I mean, he deserves it. I think he's someone that plays the position the right way. He goes about his business the right way. And that's why they were in the game, the Super Bowl. And I mean, he played a great game in the Super Bowl, and it proved a lot of people wrong, even that were still doubting him. Obviously it's great for the quarterback position, the black quarterbacks that are coming up behind us and them getting their deals. I mean, obviously we know with Lamar and everything going on there and trying to get these guys the deals that they deserve. It's really cool to see, because now there's not hesitation on guys to get these deals. And even if they have to utilize running to make stuff happen, there's such big impacts on the game that they're getting the money they deserve. And so our job in this league is to go out there and win football games and to make money while we do it. And I'm glad to see that the guys that are doing it the right way are getting the job security that they deserve.
Inclusive, happy for celebrating the success of Jalen, happy for his Eagles counterpart. And again, you may think he's disingenuous. I don't know him personally. That doesn't sound like a guy who is desperate to retool his own contract so he can climb to the top of the list again. But there are other quarterbacks, other players, other athletes who do think about it that way. I think Jalen, he's getting paid for what he did last year, but he strikes me as the same kind of guy who would rather win. Maybe that's why his domino dropped first, because he didn't care anymore about waiting to see what Joe Burrow got. Cool for Patrick Mahomes. Congratulations to Jalen. And, of course, the Eagles. They've got to be over the moon excited to have this done. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I'm on the campus of Syracuse University. Oh, I don't know, 12 hours ago, I was diving into my second class as an adjunct professor. It's a different hat. It's a different side of my brain, but I'm getting more and more comfortable with it. Glad to have you with us. Happy Tuesday morning on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Come on, guys. Come on. But listen, it's up to y'all what y'all want to do. I mean, look, we got to trust. Come on. Call us when we got to get motion and movement. Come on. Come on. Let's go. Let's go. Come on.
Harden off a screen by Embiid. To the right side, switch out. Nick Claxton has him. Eight to shoot. Harden picks it up. He goes to Maxey. Maxey, deep three. Left perimeter in the air. It's good. Maxey is helping to carry the Sixers. Baseline drive by Tyrese. Down to the corner, Tucker. And it's in the air, but he didn't get it off. Hold on. The buzzer went off, but the Sixers did get it off. Here's Harden for three. It's in. And the Sixers go up by five. And Harden with his first three. Harris one-on-one with Seth. Iso on the left wing. Driving, spinning through two. He gets open and lays it in. Brooklyn with a breakdown. Jalen goes to Embiid. Embiid once again with two players on him. To the left corner he goes. Maxey for three. Ball game. Maxey knocking down another three. And the Sixers back in front by 11.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Sixers Radio Network, Tom McGinnis. But it comes only after Doc Rivers makes a very important decision. A timeout before half didn't quite do the trick for the Philadelphia 76ers, who looked a little bit like they were sleepwalking in that first half against the Brooklyn Nets, let's be honest. They almost appeared to be out there on the court believing that just because they showed up, they would be able to win this game against the Nets. Now, granted, they have more talent. They've got superstars. They've got a potential MVP winner who's leading them. They've also got a young, sharp-shooting Tyrese Maxey. They've got an experienced Tobias Harris. Yes. Oh, I forgot. Sorry, James Harden. They have James Harden. They should win this series handily because the Nets do not have superstars. The Nets traded away two superstars, and it's only because their chemistry got better and of the leadership of Jacques Vaughn and his staff that they're able to stay out of the play-in tournament. I actually think this is an incredible feat of the Brooklyn Nets. But the Sixers are a better team. And in the first half, they did not play like a better team. They potentially did that whole play down to the level of the competition thing. Actually trailing at the half. What you hear with Doc Rivers on TNT as he's mic'd up is him exhorting his team right before half. They get into halftime. I'm sure he had choice words for them inside the locker room. They come back out. They've got a play all set up. They don't run it the way they're supposed to. 60 seconds into the third quarter, he calls another timeout. James Harden said he was cussing us out. He was asked what Doc said in that huddle. That's it. Cursing us out. It worked, though, because following that timeout, again, not even 2 minutes into the third quarter, it leads to a 24-12 spurt by the Sixers. They're able essentially to hold Brooklyn at bay from that point forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Doc Rivers is a veteran coach. Now, he gets a lot of flack for some of the collapses that his teams have made in the past, like the Clippers and their Game 7 issues. But even with Philadelphia, he's been there now for a couple of years. Or actually, it's been more than a couple of years now. They keep running into this second-round glass ceiling. So I know no one's going to get psyched if the Sixers beat the Nets in a first-round series. No one's likely to give them a ton of credit for that. But the idea is that Doc Rivers, as a veteran coach, recognized what was necessary. unconventional to call a timeout 60 seconds into the second half, and yet he knew that's what his team needed. He's a former NBA point guard himself. He's very smart. He's been around the league a long time. That decision sparked his team and made a huge difference.
We talked about something at halftime. I thought we wasted the whole first half, literally just running random, not trusting our sets. I talked at halftime, is why do we run skeleton if we're not going to run it in the game? And we drew up a play, first play, we didn't run it. So I thought we needed to talk about it. And, I'll give him credit. From that point on, I thought our execution was unbelievable. We got guys to the right space. Joel was patient. James was patient. We moved the ball. We got every shot we wanted. And so that was a hard game because we got outside of ourselves in the first half. I thought that we were forcing it. We were trying, nothing selfish, but we were trying to score, all of us, instead of they're giving you the answers with their traps. Trust your stuff. Trust your spacing. Move the ball. And the right guys are going to end up with the ball. And if we do it enough, eventually you're going to get one-on-ones, and then you're going to dominate the game. And I thought we did that in the second half.
So he recognized that there was a moment there in which his team, kind of in a dire situation, not that the game was over, not that it was done, but his team needed him again. That was a pivotal moment. The team responded, and I like that move. I think this veteran coach, Doc Rivers, should get credit for that because he sure gets blamed when things don't go the right way. Huge shooting night. When I say huge shooting night, I mean clutch. I mean the dagger shots over and over for Tyrese Maxey, who ends up with 33. Now, often, pretty much everyone on the Sixers will play in the shadow of Joel Embiid. He was a monster on the glass, 19 rebounds to go along with 20 points, nearly a triple-double. But Tyrese Maxey was the one who kept coming up with big shot after big shot, like a stake in the heart of the Nets.
I just want to win, man. It's like, we knew this was an important game. Tuck said it, as soon as we won game one, that game two is going to be the hardest game. And we wanted to go make sure that we protected home court. I mean, we started off slow, like we talked about, but we went to the half only down 5. As bad as we played offensively, we were only down 5 points. And we knew that if we get our offense to catch up to our defense and continue to be stingy on defense, then we knew we had a shot.
I think from the perspective of the Nets, what you say is, hey, we had a lead. The Nets actually were up by double figures in this game. They were up by 10 in the first half. And I know Jacques Vaughn and players said, hey, we got to keep our foot on the gas. We can't let up. I actually don't think that's the case. I think if both teams are playing their best basketball, Brooklyn is not nearly as good. So it was a great first half from Brooklyn. The Nets were able to build this lead on the road, but the Sixers were playing so poorly. They weren't hitting shots. They weren't in sync. It just looked choppy to me, and that's one way to describe it. So, yes, the Nets built a lead, but I don't think I agree that if they keep their foot on the gas, they end up winning this game. I think the Sixers, if they play their game, are the far better team. But first-round matchups aren't going to earn them any credibility. So it's about the second round. If they get there and they get through the second round, then people might take them seriously. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Here is Monk with a shovel shot that doesn't go on the right side. Rebound, Draymond gets away, and it's a technical foul on Draymond Green for stomping Sabonis as he tried to get out of the way up the floor. And Draymond might get a flagrant foul and get ejected here. Sabonis still down.
Curry has the rebound. Sabonis on the floor, and he just got stomped on by Green, and a foul was called. And that may warrant an ejection. There was nothing subtle about that. He went to the floor, and Green in the tangle, it appeared to me like he just... I said stomped, and until I see a replay, I'm going to stick with that for the moment. But Sabonis is still down.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You get first the Tim Roy version of the seminal moment in the fourth quarter of Kings and Warriors. It's what everyone will be talking about on this Tuesday. Trust me, it's always Dre. It's always Dre Day in the playoffs. And then you also get the version of the Kings and their iconic announcer, Gary Gerald, with the word stomped. Stomped. You're going to be hearing that word a lot on Tuesday, too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Here's what happens. If you haven't seen the video, it's out there, but I'm going to tell you. There was a little extracurricular activity in game one with Draymond. You know that he likes to incite riots or near riots. He's trying to get inside his opponent's heads. So he had already had his foot grabbed in game number one. In game two, he and DeMontis Sabonis are going back and forth. They're jawing. There's a little bit of, again, extracurricular activity. And on this particular play, Sabonis hits the ground underneath the hoop late in the, well, it's mid-fourth quarter, I guess, late in the game. And when he does, Draymond is kind of looming over top of him. Not on purpose. This was not LeBron standing over Draymond in the NBA Finals years ago. This was him just kind of coming down in that area. And so as Sabonis slips and falls, he grabs onto Draymond's leg. And Dre is trying to shake him off. And as he does that, he frees his leg and steps hard on the chest of Sabonis. Now, he didn't appear in any way to try to mitigate the weight that he was putting on Sabonis. It's not like he was trying to avoid him. Now, I do think that it's Sabonis's fault for grabbing his leg, and I don't think that the way they applied the fouls was equitable. I don't believe, though, that Draymond couldn't possibly. It's a little bit like the NFL rule with quarterbacks where you're not supposed to put all of your weight on a quarterback when you're taking him down. It's a subjective thing, of course. But in this particular case, it didn't seem as though Draymond did anything to lessen the impact or the weight. In fact, as he's trying to shake his leg free and get away, he's like, screw it. I don't care if my leg comes down directly on dude's chest. And so he does. Now, I don't know if he put all his weight on him, meant to hurt him, anything like that. Just he didn't try to avoid him. And as he brings his foot down, he definitely brings it down with impact. For that, after a conference and after the officials look at it, there's a review. He is leveled with a flagrant two and is ejected, whereas Sabonis, who grabs his leg and pulls him off balance, gets a technical foul. I didn't love that. I don't love ejecting players without a prior incident. I don't love the flagrant two that results in an automatic ejection. What I will say is that Draymond Green's reputation precedes him. That's the deal. He does not get the benefit of the doubt. It's always Dre. This is playoff Dre. He brings the fire, the energy. He brings the spirit. After this incident happens, before we find out it's a flagrant two, he's responding to the crowd. He's inciting the crowd. They're taunting him. He's taunting back. He's clapping. He's yelling. In fact, he was yelling into the camera that gets into his face. So he was not backing down. And while I do believe that officials, for the most part, judge each of these incidents in a vacuum, that's what they're supposed to do. You're not supposed to have any preconceived notions beyond this actual game and the flow of this game. The fact is that it's impossible to not know Draymond's history. It's impossible to not know that there are times when he has done this in the past where he's crossed the line, that he gets a lot of ejections. Well, he gets a lot of technical fouls. He also then has been ejected multiple times or has ended up serving a suspension because of fouls. He had to miss an NBA Finals game in the past. I mean, this is all part of Draymond. There's no way that you can ignore it. Now, Draymond is the heart and soul of the Warriors. Without his fire, they don't have the rings. Without his energy on the court, they don't operate as well. Not to mention he's their best defensive player, and he's a wonderful passer. He prides himself on passing and moving the ball around, so he's kind of the center cog in that wheel, which is how Steve Kerr drew it up. The issue, of course, is that he rides this line, and there are times when he goes over the line, and his emotion gets the best of him.
My leg got grabbed second time in two nights. Referees just watch it. I got to land my foot somewhere. And I'm not the most flexible person, so it's not stretching that far.
So you didn't really see where you were stepping? You just kind of...
I can only step so far and pulling my leg away. So it is what it is. The explanation was I stumped too hard.
How hard was that impact? Were you surprised that he was on the ground for that long?
No, I wasn't surprised that he stayed down that long.
Okay, I just have to tell you this. I was stunned, like, honestly, to find out that Sabonis had x-rays? For what? Were there broken ribs? It didn't seem like it. He was still in the game after that. Yeah, I'm not sure what the point of that was, except maybe they were looking for a footprint.
You're not a champ. You're a clown.
It did seem like he stayed down there for a long time. Now, I'm not the one who had my chest stomped on. It seemed very dramatic. I do not know why you would have x-rays unless there was some kind of pain where he couldn't breathe and they were fearing of broken ribs, but it didn't appear that way when he was back on the court. And Draymond, again, let his emotions get the best of him. Now, he doesn't believe it should have been a flagrant two, and he's gonna die on that hill. But also, he's coming into this feeling like, hey, the Kings started this. The Kings have been inciting this. I'm not doing this by myself. I'm responding to them.
It was Monk last game, right on the baseline under the rim. So either you're going to stop it. John Goble was looking at Monk hold my leg the last game, and he just let it go. And Zach clearly was watching my leg get held this game and let it go. So I guess ankle grabbing is okay.
I guess ankle grabbing is okay. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Again, pivotal moment because he is so important to what the Warriors want to do. And they were fighting, scratching, clawing. Now, Steph Curry did not shoot well. He was shadowed by Davion Mitchell a lot of the game. That's Mitchell's responsibility. But the Warriors were able to tie it, maybe feeding off the emotion of what had happened with Draymond leaving the game. They get a couple of big shots from Steph. Actually, he didn't shoot well from outside, but he had a lot of success driving to the hoop. In fact, in some cases, he would lose his defender entirely and had a wide open look up close. So they were able to get some big offensive rebounds, Kevon Looney out there, and they did a better job in the paint than they did from shooting outside, though Steph had a couple of big ones. Klay had one as well. Ultimately, though, the Kings were able to pull away. And what I like about what I saw from them is that they did not lose their composure. Even after they lost the lead, they did not lose their composure. They lost the lead. They were tied after Draymond got ejected. And I felt like they responded by maybe taking a page out of the book of the Warriors. Now, that would make sense, right? Because they have a coach who was part of their championship run a year ago. Mike Brown got a couple of Warriors staff members that are with him with the Kings, and he brings that credibility, but also brings that perspective and approach to basketball. And you could see them spread the ball around and find open looks later in the game.
Fox with a rebound. Gives it up to Malik Monk with 2:25 to go. Long lead pass, Harrison Barnes. Shoulders into the lane. Dumps to the corner. Davion has it. He drives. He kicks. Fox will step into a straightaway three. He's got the triple. Sacramento leads by six at 107-101. Monk will be the initiator. He is greeted by Wiggins as he crosses the midcourt line. Moves left. Lost the ball. Grabbed by Sabonis. Feeds in the corner. Wide open. Davion Mitchell for three. Score! score. The triple for Davion Mitchell. And the Kings lead is now 9 with a minute 17 to go. It's 112-103. Desperation 3 missed by the Warriors. And the horn sounds to end this second game of this 7-game series. And the Kings take a 2-0 advantage by a final score of 114-106.
To see that they had 22 turnovers and we were able to capitalize off those turnovers was huge. We got to keep having active hands throughout the ball game and try to get as many deflections as possible and hope those can turn into points going the other way. We keep talking pace. We got to keep playing fast, even faster than what we play tonight. Because that's how we play.
I will say this about the Kings. They started miserably. They had 9 turnovers in the first quarter, and they missed, I think, their first 11 shots from beyond the arc. The rest of the game, after the first quarter, only 5 turnovers. They only allowed the Warriors 9 points off turnovers. As Mike Brown indicates, they had 25 points off the Warriors' mistakes. This is what the Warriors have been on the road. This is who they are. They're not a great road team. They play much better at home. But for now, the Sacramento Kings, who suffered through the longest NBA playoff drought, now have a 2-0 lead over the Big Brother, the celebrated championship Big Brother in the Bay Area. If you missed our conversation with Sean Cunningham, he was there. He had a great perspective on game 2. He's inside the arena, spoke to players in the locker room. That's part of our podcast. Great to have you with us. There are photos up now on Twitter, A-Law Radio from the Grand Canyon. There'll be more soon. We're going to throw them up on Facebook as well. And we'll talk to you tonight after hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
Weddings are the celebration of all the details that make a couple perfect for each other. And you can find your perfect fit, too, at Indochino. Choose every detail of a custom-tailored suit, from lapels to linings and more, starting at just $4.99. My bad.
Shh. Sorry.
Find the suit that's perfect for you. Go to Indochino.com and use code PODCAST for 10% off any purchase of $3.99 or more. That's 10% off $3.99 or more at Indochino.com. Code PODCAST.